views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Hello, can people hear me? Hello?
We can hear you. We're bringing in the intro to Race Treaty and welcoming the audience, listening audience. You're active and live, sister, so go forward.
All right. Hey, everyone, good evening and free the land. In two of the past shows we have done, we provided the context to black liberation movements in Mississippi with particular focus on Republic of New Africa and the Malcolm X grassroots movement, their 25-year-plus history leading up to the grassroots foray into electoral politics. In today's show, we will talk about the role of grassroots principles and values in the campaign, the role of grassroots principles that will undergird municipal leadership, and the role of grassroots principles that will continue to nurture Antar Lumumba and his team and facilitate participatory democracy through people's assemblies. I want to start off the program by welcoming Dr. Makungu Akinyele and Akil Bakari to the show, and later on we might be joined by Taliba Obuya, who's also a member of the Malcolm X grassroots movement. Welcome, everyone. The first question I have is for Akil. Akil is the state coordinator of MXGM Mississippi, and Akil, how would you describe the collective decision and its manifestation on the Malcolm X grassroots movement organizing work in the community, since you all ran Chokwe for office and then ran Antar a second time, and ran Antar successfully for the second time again?
Okay, Noel, can you hear me? Can everybody hear me?
I can hear you.
Okay, there was some sort of feedback at the first part of your question, and I didn't hear all of it.
Okay. I was introducing you as the state coordinator of MXGM, and the question is, how would you describe the collective decision that the Malcolm X grassroots movement has made to enter into electoral politics, and how that decision and the manifestations based on the decision will continue to show up in the organizing work that you do in the community because of Chokwe serving in office for 8 months and because of Antar running and losing the first time, and now that Antar is in office? I guess that's a three-part question.
Okay. As we stated on the previous two programs that we've done around MXG's foray into the electoral arena was to bring about actually a new way of organizing our people, most of which who participate in electoral politics, but taking it a step further beyond just voting, understanding that voting is just one step in that process. We wanted to introduce the whole concept of participating in governance and ultimately creating and organizing the masses into actually dictating to the governors as to how it's moved. And so that was part of the premise of actually doing entering into the electoral arena. With that in mind, we were successful in electing Shelfway Lumumba in 2009 to a council representative seat, acting as a 7th ward council, and we were able to put him in the office representing his ward. Through those 4 years, we learned how municipal governance works, and that in order for us to fully engage what our ideas were, as well as those that came out of the People's Assembly, that we put in place in 2009. It was clear that we needed to take the mayor's seat in order to execute more of what we wanted to do and what the community felt like needed to be done. And so we sought the mayoral seat in Jackson in 2013 in the person of Shelfway Lumumba. We were successful. And as he and his team inside the government, as well as the MXG body outside of the government, we were attempting to implement our plan. Unfortunately, Mayor Lumumba, the late Mayor Lumumba, made transition in early 2014 after serving only 8 months in his term, and we were curtailed in moving forward with what we felt was an ambitious program,
right?
Using electoral politics as one vehicle, which brought us to the special election after his death. That was held. It was a 1 month election. His son, Shelfway Anta Lumumba, after consulting with his father in the hospital, and that was something that we weren't aware of until several days afterwards. And he stated that he felt like it was his duty to seek to finish out his father's term and to help us implement the plan that we had laid out. And so, given the fact that he just lost his father, he's newly married, his wife was pregnant with their current child, Alake, all of us in the MXG Napo family, and all across the country and the world, grieving our fallen brother, it was not the ideal time to do it. However, this is what we felt like we needed to do, and that's what we did. We weren't successful in the manner of him, of Antar, being elected in 2014, but we were really successful in other ways. Antar being a political novice in the sense that he never run for anything, and although he had some name recognition as related to his father, he really made a very good showing. He was able to secure 19,000 votes. He actually led the primary in 2014 in the special election. And we were not as successful in the runoff, which he made. And he garnered 19,000 votes, which showed us that we really had a strong base, as it was shown with his father's election. We just had to build on it. And so here we are. We started, and I'm sorry for the background noise. I'm in a position where I can't move. So at any rate, we started about a year and a half out before the May 2nd, 2017 primary. He reached out, and we formulated a plan as an organization, as MXG and NAPO, and obviously we already had the People's Platform in place from the previous elections and from previous work we had done in Jackson prior to elections. And ANTAR had grown tremendously. We were working on numerous issues during that period of time over the past year and a half. We formed a coalition called the Coalition for Economic Justice and organized people around the struggle for economic sovereignty for Jackson, where the hostile state government apparatus was attempting to, and still attempting to, take control of Jackson's airport, to destabilize Jackson's water sovereignty, and also to try to annex huge portions of Jackson. We took on this fight as the coalition, and ANTAR played a key and critical role in those struggles. The fact that he had been worked previously in the community and continued to do that work even after losing that special election, the citizens of Jackson were able to see that he was truly committed to Jackson, whether he was its mayor or not. And so I think that work and sincerity of work and dedication and commitment to Jackson translated in an overwhelming victory in the May 2nd primary, where there were 9 candidates in that primary. There was a sitting mayor, a sitting state senator, and a sitting county board of supervisors in that race. And ANTAR was able to garner 55% of the vote and win handily, which is right now still confounding pundits, as they just could not understand mathematically how he was able to do that and avoid a runoff. And then that victory, May 2nd, was then reinforced with a resounding, overwhelming 93% victory in this past June 6th general election. So that's where we are today. Hello, there? Hello?
Hello?
Okay, I'm here. Did you hear me?
Hello? Hello?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, well, there's some bad weather. I don't know if it's affecting the cell towers.
Yes, we can hear that crackling, but Noel, yes, Noel, we could hear you. But go ahead, Brother Akil. We can hear that crackling, but we understand everything you're saying. So that explains what we are hearing. But we certainly can hear your words.
Okay.
Yeah.
The next question is for Dr. Akinyele. Dr. Akinyele, how would you describe the impact and scale of the Jackson chapter's decision to enter into electoral politics? And how would you describe the impact it has on the national level of grassroots work that the Malcolm X grassroots movement has been engaged in for the past 25 years?
Noel, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, great. Great question. I think, the victory of Chokwe ANTAR, as well as the previous victory of Brother Chokwe Lumumba, in this is very significant in that it showed that a people's movement that didn't vacillate on its politics or try to hide its history could actually win amongst the masses by going to the people, sharing power with the people, and being honest with the people. That it showed that, first of all. So that's very important. It showed what's possible, I think, throughout the U.S. empire. That's one thing. Secondly, as you know, it was not an easy decision for us to come to the decision of engaging in electoral politics from the very first time that Brother Chokwe ran for city council. For years, we had abstained from electoral politics as a mode of struggle. On the other hand, it was our analysis that engaging in electoral politics, first of all, on the local level, and then second of all, in the national territory, in the South, where the masses of black people live, had a different meaning than just generally engaging in the U.S. empire's electoral politics. And so, based upon that assessment, we saw that engaging on the local level would give us an opportunity to first organize the people for power, to demonstrate to the people what organized people can do when they want to through the people's assemblies, and then to actually carry that out. And also, you know, we look back on Malcolm's speech, The Ballot or the Bullet, where basically where Malcolm was advocating engaging in electoral politics, not necessarily because it meant that we were buying into the empire's game, but it gave us the practice of nation building and governing. Akil talked about the importance of learning the art of governance. It gave us that practice for our long-term projection of self-determination and national independence. And then lastly, what I'll say is the impact of Jackson and what Jackson means. Jackson has basically become a model for what's possible nationally. It also becomes a model for the strategic objectives of the Malcolm X grassroots movement and our parent organization, the New African People's Organization. It becomes a model for that strategic objective of fighting for self-determination and engaging our oppressors on a very direct level by organizing the masses. And we're not going to win this fight without the engagement of a significant number of the people. This is not just a few people winning a fight. It's organizing the masses, the grassroots, to fight. So I hope that made sense to you, Noel.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for that. Akil, next question is to you. Could you elaborate on the role, the responsibility that local MXGM plays in nurturing Antar Lumumba through this municipal leadership process? How does this extend to the cadre of leadership at the city level to ensure that the campaign ideology, which in essence is the Malcolm X grassroots movement's liberatory ideology, is going to help the leaders to continue to do what is right for the people of Jackson?
Okay, I think Makungu, in part of his answer, speaks to that in that he ran, as his father did, unapologetically on our idea of how our being the New African People's Organization and the Malcolm X grassroots movement, how this should look and how it should move. The local chapter here in Jackson has been around for roughly 27 years. And that experience and that exposure and interaction with the people of Jackson was invaluable to his father's campaign and to his, as the people know, they know us. They know who we are. They know our work. They know the struggles that we participated in with them. And so because of that and the fact that people responded in such a resounding manner at the ballot box, it gives us the mandate to go into governance, actually to change how it's done. And people expect that from us because that's what's needed. It's obvious that what's happened before doesn't work, and specifically it doesn't work for the masses of our folks here in Jackson. And it's very important that it's a two-pronged approach to this, having that MXGM ideology and mindset inside the government, but we also have to simultaneously continue to work and organize outside of the government in order for this to work to its fullest extent.
Great. That's awesome. Thank you so much. So, Dr. Akinyele, the question for you is going to be similar. How does the national or the other chapters within the empire support and nurture
Jackson as it takes on this big responsibility of municipal leadership again, but with a different generation's, I guess, footprint that is being developed because of Antar being a second generation MXGM member. Is there a conversation or a consensus on investing in Jackson as MXGM's chapter to make it rise through grassroots municipal leadership? If so, how will that look like?
I think that, yes, we had to have a long conversation. First of all, when we had to start over again with a conversation about whether or not we would support Antar in this run for mayor. The important thing was we needed to make sure that if Antar is representing for mayor in Jackson, that it definitely has to make sure that it supports the people and the needs and the will of the people of Jackson. That's first and foremost. Second of all, that this run is not a run based on ego, but a run based upon does fighting for the mayoral position make sense, again, in our overall long-range strategic objectives. So we had to have that conversation. And would it benefit our strategic objectives or would it hinder what we were looking to do? And again, what we saw is, you know, I'm sure you know that Mississippi is at the bottom of everything in terms of statistics in the U.S. empire, right? In terms of health care, education. Jackson is a majority New African or majority black city in the midst of this old Confederate state.
Yep.
Any kind of victory that we can win in that position, first of all, is a challenge to the old Confederacy and the whole U.S. empire. And so that victory becomes important. And if we can always make every struggle, Akil talked about some of the struggles directly in Jackson, the struggle around water usage, right? The struggle around the airport. Those are struggles about black control of black lives. And so those become struggles for self-determination. These become opportunities for us to argue and fight around the question of self-determination. I believe that, you know, Antar has laid out an amazing program. And when the people of Jackson see the benefits, the changes, the development of Jackson, the credit is going to go to that idea of having self-determination for Jackson, right? When we engage in fights against the state of Mississippi, when we engage in fights against the U.S. empire to fight for the rights of the people of Jackson, people are going to see that as a worthy fight. And so all of this goes in line of, first of all, developing our people's sense of national consciousness and sense of a desire for self-determination. Now, how does that fit with the rest of MXGM? We see right now Mississippi as the point of the spear in our struggle for self-determination. And so we see that in the long run, it's going to be very important for us to be there. Just like in the first election, we had young people coming from all over the country going down to Mississippi to help. We've done that this time, and we want to continue doing that. Again, letting Mississippi be the point of the spear for self-determination, but not just keeping it in Mississippi. As we perfect our ability to organize and to mobilize the masses for political power in Mississippi, that's going to be the model that we can use in other local fights for black power, for self-determination throughout the South. And so that's going to be a real important fight that we can carry through. And we can always point back to Mississippi as the example of what's possible. Does that make sense?
That's good. Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much. Akil, back to you again. So you are the co-chair of the Transition Committee. And what are your expectations of an exceptional transition? How does that look like for you when we think about transition? When we are talking about transition, building this transition team, what does that look like for you? What do you foresee the transition team to produce in terms of being responsible and accountable towards the people of Jackson and to make Jackson rise?
Well, a huge portion of the Mary Elect Lumumba campaign has been creating space in Jackson for inclusiveness, and particularly for those who have been traditionally locked out and left out. Mm-hmm. Now, there's obviously Jackson is roughly 83% New African Black City, and roughly 15-20% white, with a small percentage of East Indians, Latinos, and the like.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we want to do is try to put forth a team with the correct expertise in the areas of work that the city has as far as their departmental structure is concerned, but mm-hmm. also reflect the population of Jackson, and
mm-hmm.
Have this sense of this collective responsibility that what we preach, what the Mary Elect Lumumba has stressed and preached throughout his campaign, and which we as a grassroots movement on the ground has stressed, is that
mm-hmm.
in order for us to be as successful and to empower the masses of people here in Jackson, Mississippi, then it's going to take a collective effort that the Mary Elect and his administrative team in the government alone cannot do this. It's going to require the New African People's Organization and the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement, of course, on the ground, but it's also mm-hmm. going to require the vast majority of the citizens of Jackson to participate in redirecting how governance takes place and how the empowerment of people takes place. And just mm-hmm. really just out of necessity, in the sense, because of the hostile attacks against Jackson by the state and other entities. So with that in mind, that's been the impetus on how we put together a team, from whether it's from education to engineering, whether it's planning and economic development, administration, and there's also a huge push around using technology as a tool for education and innovation. There's a mm-hmm. tremendous amount of talent here in Jackson that we can utilize to do those things. And so that's our idea and focus in trying to put together a productive team. And transition just does not go from this point until the mayor elect is sworn in. Transition actually goes in throughout the first year of his term.
That's right. That is right. Thank you so much for that, Akhil. So, Dr. Artemiele, back to you. This question, Akhil, please feel free to jump in at some point also. There's been a heavy production of romanticized stories of a radical mayoral ascension, which of course include oversimplified, untruthful, ambiguous, and white leftist narratives about Chokwe and Antar and the grassroots movement's work by international and national media outlets that are mindless about local communities' radical history and racial history, relationships, struggles, and truth. How do you see MXGM righting these wrongs? How can MXGM engage in accountable storytelling and writing of its own history and evolution that will assert the truth and counter self-centered untruths of the white liberal and left movements?
I'm going to try to answer that, Noel, as best I can. I think that one of the things that becomes very important is that we not allow the struggle of Mississippi and the struggle of the Malcolm X grassroots movement to be reduced to some kind of a generalized struggle of the
mm-hmm.
left,
to
where the movement for self-determination, which is a nationalist movement, a revolutionary nationalist movement, gets submerged under a more general left liberal, it's a part of the overall left and liberal surge. And I think a lot of people have been, a lot of leftists came down to Mississippi, got involved,
right.
and the way they're describing our movement is, if it's just some kind of a, it's one segment of the broad left movement. We're very clear, mm-hmm. first of all, that the most significant revolutionary movements inside the United States today are people's movements for self-determination, the New African
That's
movement.
Right.
The Puerto mm-hmm. Rican movement, the Chicano Mexicano mm-hmm. movement, the movement of our Native American brothers and sisters.
That's right.
These are the most significant movements because they are attacking the U.S. where its corrupt power is most important. They are attacking settler mm-hmm. colonialism. They are attacking mm-hmm. settler colonialism, which, yes, is grounded in capitalism, but it's a capitalism that developed through national mm-hmm. oppression. It's not just some kind of organic or orthodox leftist or Marxist analysis of who our people are. Our people's struggle is a struggle first and foremost for self-determination and black control mm-hmm. of black lives, black power, in other
mm-hmm.
words.
That's
as it
right.
interacts with other people's movement for economic justice, economic democracy,
uh-huh.
and such, absolutely, we are in line with that. But we cannot allow our own movement to be submerged as a part of a general left movement. And oftentimes, that's the way it's discussed. Chokwe Antar mm-hmm. is discussed as a leftist or a, you know, no, he's a nationalist, just as his
that's
father
right.
was a nationalist.
Absolutely,
as the mayor, he's going to fight for every citizen that lives in the city of Jackson, right? But
that's
absolutely,
right.
we know that as we solve the conditions and the problems of the oppressed national people, the New African people, that it's going to make life mm-hmm. better for everybody. Because once again, we are a
That's
nationalist
right.
movement, not a racialist movement, right? And so so it becomes important to understand that every benefit that comes to the New African nation is going to benefit every person who is in that territory. And so I think for me, that's the most important thing that we have to challenge and fight back against from the left.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Akil?
Yes.
You want to add?
I think there's, he summed it up perfectly. I don't think I won't disturb any of that by adding anything else. I think that was succinct and right on point.
Mm-hmm. Thank you both. And so the next question, if Taliba was here, I would have wanted Taliba to kind of sort of take a shot at this, but I guess since she's still not on the show with us, I would love for both of you to please respond. So I see, as a person who has been an outsider, insider kind of in this whole process of electoral politics, one thing I've noticed, and working with the MXGM, some of the things I've noticed are the presence of amazing women as leaders. And if you both can speak to the role of women in MXGM, NAPO, RNA, and the role of women in MXGM women and nurturing other women in the electoral politics, could you please talk about that?
I will allow Mukungu to speak to some of the that work around NAPO and MXGM, and then I'll pick up with some of how that manifests itself within the campaign, if that's
all
good
right.
for him.
Okay, absolutely. I think it's some years ago, we, you know, even from the very beginning of our organization, and we say its beginning is not just MXGM, but the New African People's Organization, which began its formation in the late 70s, but came to fruition
mm-hmm.
In the mid-80s, 1984. Women have always been key in the leadership. It was later through MXGM that we specifically, as one of our principals, talk about the importance of us fighting sexist oppression, because we realize that and we recognize that oftentimes New African women are held back by the practices, beliefs, and machinations of men who have certain ideas about women's place. And so we,
mm-hmm.
for a long time, we have fought for the absolute equal access of women into every aspect of our people's struggle, and
mm-hmm.
and that has happened because we have had strong women who have insisted that happen, that 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 fight happened. Again, from the early days of our movement, though she was not directly a part of our organization, from people like Afeni Shakur, from Nahanda Abiodun, who is a member of the New African People's Organization and the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement, who is currently exiled in Cuba. Hadi Tahima and Chinganji Akinyela all were women early on who pushed and insisted that we had to have this fight for the inclusion of women in leadership, in the struggle itself, and every part of our struggle. And I think today we've got some amazing young sisters who I think are even more radical in their insistence of fighting for the power of women, but not just women, the power of all New Africans, regardless of gender, sexuality, or whatever it might be, because that understanding of our social construct becomes very important if we're talking about really fighting for and gaining people's power in the future. So I think that, you know, we've been set up in a really good way, and I think we saw it even, you know, Akil will speak more directly to it, but from I think much of the campaign was organized by Rukia Lumumba, also Brother Antar's spouse, sister, you know, who is a strong woman herself. And so we saw those things happening even in that.
Absolutely, yes. Specifically, Rukia was the day-to-day managing portion of the our model of tackling electoral politics was totally different than what's traditionally done. We never had a campaign manager. We don't believe in leadership centralized in one person. So we have what's called a coordinating committee. Most overwhelming of which was made up of MXG NAPO members. That was the primary strategic grouping that that managed strategy and made sure that we were on point as it relates to who we are as MXG and NAPO. Rukia Lumumba, the sister of Antar, was the managing day-to-day co-chair of the coordinating committee, and Hondo Lumumba was the other co-chair, who was took more of a background role in participating in strategy. Ebony Lumumba, the wife of Antar Lumumba, was the media chair. Then we had some amazing young people, queer and female, who headed up the youth committee. So then, on other aspects of the campaign, it was women-led. So there was a strong representation of women throughout the campaign in leadership position, making decisions, which was also has been reflected within our organization, whether it's the New African People's Organization or the Malcolm X Grassroots Movement. And so that model of leadership, where women are playing their just prominent role in how we move, is one of the great virtues of what we have attempted to accomplish here, not only here in Jackson, but around the American Empire.
So the next question is for both of you. Again, thank you so much for the response, for uplifting the amazing women and the work and the self-determined space creation they have done within the campaign, and I'm a witness to that, so thank you for that. The next question is, the grassroots movement is in electoral politics now, so how do you envision nurturing that? How do you envision young people who are inspired by Antar Lumumba, who are inspired by the work people have done on the campaign, do you see a role for MXGM to nurture political desires of young people who are currently either working on the campaign, have helped on the campaign, or others who are inspired by the campaign in other parts of the country? How do you see that? Do you see that as a viable option for extending MXGM's grassroots work?
I think that this foray into electoral politics is still a two-edged sword. I think it becomes important that we be clear with people that that electoral politics is a tactic. It's not the strategy. Getting people elected into public office is not going to free us. It gives us leverage to maneuver for freedom, but that is not the end in itself. That's the mistake that was made in the 1970s when black people started getting a few mayors and a few senators and congresspeople in and assumed that meant that full inclusion within the empire society. But it was not. And so we have to be very clear, even as we push and strategize of running other people for offices, whether it's local sheriffs, congress people, council people, whatever it might be, that those people have to be advocates for black self-determination and ultimate nationhood.
Right.
I saw this example about 20 years ago when I was in Spain in the Basque country. And you had Basque mayors, you had Basque members of the Spanish Senate, but they were there to advocate independence for the Basque nation and self-determination for the Basque nation. Every fight they took up. And so the thing that we have to be careful of is not allowing ourselves to get seduced into this idea and not letting the people believe that we think that electoral politics itself is the solution. It's only a tactic towards self-determination.
That's right. That is right. Thank you so much for that. Akil?
Yeah, I would absolutely concur, Noel, and you can obviously verify our particular analysis around all this as we talk about this every Thursday on Voices from the Grassroots, the MHC radio program.
Right.
Is that we constantly inform and educate our people that this is a tactic and that electoral politics is not our ultimate goal and that we have to be strategic in what offices that we attempt to go after as the those that are most able to broadly help our larger strategic goals. And just running for an office just simply to have it, as I've stated to you on many times, is that it's a waste of time and energy and resources. And that's been proven over the years. As Mukungu stated earlier, for those that are not only in Jackson but outside of Jackson, if you're talking about doing this, just romanticizing it to hold an office, that's not our point of view. It's far from it. These are tactics at this particular point in time in history that we deem necessary to use.
Thank you so much for that. So how do you see these conversations taking shape in order to, build capacity of the people of Jackson and to make them understand that electoral politics is one of the tactics, but nation building actually includes a large-scale liberatory strategy, and there are people's assemblies. There's a lot of other things that the grassroots movement and its allies have been engaged in a place-based way. So I think what's happening in Jackson is is different from what's happening in Atlanta. So would you both care to elaborate on how that looks like in Jackson for us right now, and what does it look like in other chapters, if you want to give examples of nation building?
All right, I'll let me take Jackson first, and after then, unfortunately, I'm going to have to jump off. I've got some things I got to do, and I really hate that. And Mukungu is fully capable of addressing any and everything else that you may have. That being said, the assemblies are critically important, and we have to here at MXG and NAPO on the ground really work to implement those to the full extent so that we do educate our people around the whole idea of what we're using electoral politics for, and that it's not the end goal. It's just a tactic within a larger strategy of self-determination. And also utilize the organizing opportunities that we have across Jackson with the resounding victory and the resounding acceptance of who we are in ANTAR's platform and program. That's obviously a reflection of the New African People's Organization and MFG. And so our job is to make sure that we take advantage of this moment and really educate our people around how we move in order to secure self-determination in all aspects. You know, we have an educational agenda where we really have to radically change how education is provided in the city of Jackson and ultimately in Mississippi, because it's failing not only people in Jackson, Mississippi, it's failing our children all over the American empire, but particularly here. And we have an opportunity to do that. So that's our charge. And you know, we've got to, you know, make sure that we don't miss this opportunity to really. And I think the people and the masses of our folks are ready. I think they've stated that in this past election, that they're ready for us to move in a more forward, positive, and a more radical direction.
Doc.
Yes.
Would you care to respond to that?
I think, you know, we have, within MXGM, we have a 5-point strategic plan. And I think, again, Mississippi becomes a model for putting that into practice, but also the 5-point plan, I think, becomes a way that we can keep that balance so people don't just get focused on electoral politics as the solution in itself, but a part of the tactic. And in that 5-point plan, first of all, we say that we have to get, as a part of our movement, we have to start getting access to land, that can be that space that we can actually function in and move in, and that's going to be very important. We say that, secondly, we do have to build people's assemblies, and I think that the first people's assembly that we built in Jackson was brilliant. That's the model. We're striving to do that in Atlanta, for instance. We're doing it in Oakland. You know, so those people's assemblies and that way of organizing the people for direct political democracy become very important. We say, thirdly, that we also have to build a youth movement and an education movement. That becomes important because we understand that this is a generational struggle. I started in this movement when I was 18 years old, and for folks that want a time reference, I'm 63 now, right? And it becomes important, though, that we build in the capacity to carry on a multi-generational struggle. One of the strengths of MXDM is that we're one of the few multi-generational organizations out there that has elders who've been in this movement for 40, 50 years, and young people who just got here yesterday.
Right? That's right.
And then some not-so-young people who've been in for 10, 15, 20 years. So that with that multi-generational impact, it gives us some strength that a lot of organizations don't have. But the way we're going to keep that is by creating institutions, organizations, and programs for children, for teenagers, for young adults that always engages them in these ideas of revolutionary nationalism and self-determination. So that becomes the third aspect. And the fourth aspect becomes we have to build up, particularly in the era of Trump, when fascism has come so forthrightly to the front, when many of our resources are quickly drying up, we have to build the capacity to create institutions to deal with our people's economic needs for ourselves, people's cooperatives, whether they be food cooperatives, worker cooperatives, business cooperatives, it becomes important. We think it's also important to, for instance, fight for workers' rights and for a living wage,
we want to be engaged in all of those, but it also becomes mm-hmm. important for us to show the people that sometimes you have to also, you have to do it for yourself. That's what self-determination is about, and not always begging your oppressor to provide something for you, right? We have to have the capacity to develop our own economic structures through economic democracy and socialism.
Mm-hmm.
And so that becomes the fourth aspect or fourth leg of our strategic plan. That has to be happening in Jackson. It has to be happening in Atlanta. It has to be happening wherever we can start beginning to get roots for a grassroots movement, particularly throughout the South. And then finally, again, in the era of Trump, even though we believe in building a mass movement that will, as peacefully as possible, fight for the power of our people, we have to build the capacity to defend ourselves with people's defense forces. We have to prepare our people and educate our people to defend themselves. I've been hearing that there's been some attacks in Mississippi, for instance, right? And I think we're going to see more of that as white terrorists and settlers begin to react and respond to our movement. We have to prepare our people to be prepared to defend themselves, and not just to defend our personal selves, but defend our institutions, defend our programs that are a part of our national liberation movement. So those five aspects of our strategic plan, I believe, are things that our goal needs to be right now to make those reproducible wherever we set down the Malcolm X grassroots movement.
That's right. Thank you so much, Doc. So the next question also will be for you, because Akhil jumped off the call. So the next question, which is kind of sort of, you know, a segue into the response you have provided just now. Majority of movements, so-called movement work around the world, actually seems to fall under the two categories. One is the over-assimilated left that's powered by liberalism, neoliberalism, and other forms of, white privileged spaces. And then the other one is, looking at how capitalism seems to control nonprofits and philanthropy work. A lot of times movement work seems to fall under those two categories, wherein when you talk about self-determination, when people and the groups on the ground are trying to create self-determined spaces of economic democracy, majority times in order to build capacity, they seem to have to go towards these capitalistic forces, be it nonprofits or philanthropies. So how do you determine, or what do you think should be done wherein a paradigm shift happens towards radical self-determination, radical economic self-determination, that pushes away the existing culture of nonprofit dependency? I think that nonprofit is...
Excuse me, we have a station break scheduled, and that's a very dynamic question, and we're going to delve deeper into that after this station break, if that's at all possible, Sister Scotty.
Sure. How long is the station break?
2 minutes.
Okay, that's fine.
Make Black Talk Radio your choice for digital black radio. New Black Media for the new millennium.
In 2008, the Black Talk Media Project launched the digital radio platform Black Talk Radio Network, the first such platform created to serve the black community specifically. Black Talk Radio Network has grown with a variety of radio hosts, digital radio stations, and podcasters. Web analytics say Black Talk Radio, the platform, has an online reach that ranks it among the top independent black media platforms in the world. All of this is possible because of financial contributions to the nonprofit Black Talk Media Project. If you love the work we do and the voices and perspectives we bring to you every day, make a donation today to ensure that Black Talk Radio is here in the future. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
Are we back on?
Yes, we are, sister. Yes, we are. If we could pick back up with that line of questioning, that's intense, and I'm really intensely listening to this because it's really important from a human rights prism and perspective of how this model is being developed there in Jackson. So will you carry forward, sister? Thank you.
Totally. So I'm going to repeat the question once again. How can self-determined communities move away from capitalism-powered nonprofit structures and its manifestations to build communities? To me, creating self-determined spaces does not include being a nonprofit at all, but it's easier to say than to actually make something else happen, give birth to something else. How do we even have that kind of moral imagination when all we see around us is and the pressures are so clearly indicative of the nonprofit structures being more sustainable? And there's a lot of frustration in me regarding that personally. So if you, Doc, if you care to speak to it,
okay.
Please.
I think I'm gonna answer that in three parts, Noel.
Okay.
First of all, we have to be very clear. Nonprofit in the nonprofit industry is not designed to liberate oppressed people. In fact, the whole nonprofit structure was created in the after World War II, going into the 50s, to actually suppress people's activism by catching up in that nonprofit system where you were limited in what you could talk about, what you could do, if you wanted the funding that's coming through the nonprofit system. We've seen that whole nonprofit system and NGOs used internationally to damper down and suppress national liberation movements. The Palestinian movement, it's okay to talk about maybe the pains of the Palestinian people, but you can't talk about Palestinian statehood and national liberation, right? You can talk about how badly people are being treated, but you can't talk about revolutionary solutions which are anti-capitalist, which are anti-imperialist, which are anti-settler, right? Whether it's in Africa, Latin America, or the United States. And we have seen time and time again emerging revolutionary movements. I would say even the so-called Black Lives Matter movement was an emerging revolutionary movement, quickly get caught up, get flooded with nonprofit money, and all of a sudden, those movements just become a part of the Democratic left. So, secondly, I'll say that, you can't expect currently, and unfortunately, unfortunately, the nonprofit industry has been very good in the last 5 years or so in fooling young people into believing that doing nonprofit work is the same as doing revolutionary work by pumping millions of dollars. So now young people believe that if you're doing any kind of activism, what that means is you've got a job with a nonprofit, right?
That's right.
And so, again, the weight of making revolution is always on revolutionaries. What that means, it's on us. And so that means that it becomes our job to, first of all, wage revolution,
to engage people and challenge people, to show people that, first of all, as a revolutionary and as a revolutionary movement, nobody from the state can tell us what we can talk about, what we can demand, and what actions we use to demand it. We believe firmly in the idea, Malcolm says, by any means necessary, right?
Necessary.
That means that we can't allow capitalist forces to limit or determine what means we decide to use. For those people who are out there who misunderstand Malcolm, Malcolm's slogan of by any means necessary is not necessarily or always a call to violence.
Right.
By any means necessary means just what we're doing. At some point, we've decided that electoral politics is necessary. At other points,
we may decide
it's not necessary, right? So by any means necessary means absolutely that. But the nonprofit movement, NGOs, all of these serve to limit, to dampen, and keep down what we do. Now, let me be very clear. I'm not opposed to anybody getting a job. But your job at the nonprofit is just that, a job. You know, work your job, make your money, then come home and make revolution, right? And understand the distinction between those two things. But we have to, I think, have a really clear analysis. You know, the Malcolm X Grassroots New Movement will never try to run our movement on nonprofit funding. And again, what does that mean? That means it's more difficult, but revolution is always a difficult process. That we won't always be able to hire people and give people good jobs, right, to get out in the street, to stay up and hand out and knock on doors and organize the masses and do those things. But that means that we have to be very serious when we say we want to build people's socialist co-ops, not co-ops that are built on nonprofit money, right? It means that we have to show the people how to take the little that they have, to collectively put it together, to take the individual efforts they have, organize themselves into collectives, and build people's movements. It's harder, and it will take longer, but the payoff is that you're building real people's power and not puppet power that's undergirded by capitalist funding. Does that make sense?
That's right. Oh, a lot of sense. Thank you so much for that clarity. So one thing that pains me as a Dalit woman living in Jackson, Mississippi, and being an ally to black movements is to see the worldwide nonprofit industry being a sponsor of performing pain and struggles and violences and compromised narratives on the world stage. And that, to me, is kind of a point of departure in nonprofit spaces. That's the point of departure at conferences, where every time an identity aspect of somebody's identity is mentioned, you want to equate it to the sexual violence involved because of how performance has become key through white-sponsored and high-caste-sponsored and elitist spaces, academic spaces that continue to give people an economic opportunity, visibility, world travel, all of these things in the name of liberation. So that's where my question was coming from earlier. I just wanted to share that. So how do you, as an academic, a radical academic, and a revolutionary academic, help students or nurture students to have a sense of analysis that's rooted in community accountability? That makes sense.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I've been really blessed for the last 17 or actually almost 19 years now to be teaching in an Africana Studies department.
That's right.
And a part of and a part of a professional organization that declares, that talks about academic excellence and social responsibility. And one of the things is that, the chair of our department, you also know, another one of our comrades from Malcolm X Grassroots Movement, the New African People's Organization, Dr. Akinyele Umoja. So we work really well together, and we believe that when we're teaching our students, the uniqueness of Africana studies, or so-called black studies, is that it's grounded in resistance and activism. So there's and it's grounded in that historical relationship between activist intellectuals who engage in their intellectual work not for tenure or for some kind of fame, but because their intellectual work is also a part of the people's movement. And they see their work as a way to nurture and feed the people's movement just as the people's movement feeds them. And so when we talk to our students, we start first and foremost by engaging them in this idea that, first of all, where do ideas come from? For the revolutionary, ideas come from the people's movement. It comes from engaging first in action and going to the people for those ideas. And it's just, it is the work of the intellectual. It is the work of the intellectual then to take the masses' ideas and the people's ideas and to build on them and then to give them back to the people. As the people use them, it helps us to get to other ideas, right? And so, I think that that's one of the things that I enjoy about this work is being able to talk to students and also in our work engage students in community work. For instance, we have students who make class projects of working with the People's Assembly, right? Learning how to do organizing, things like that, working in communities and in the community, and then engaging in intellectual thought about the meaning of that work that they're doing. I guess I also believe, you know, as for instance, as a professor, it's not my job to impose my political ideas on my students, but to share with them ways, and it's, as their curiosity grows, if they want to know or engage in those politics, to have conversations with them about those politics.
That's right. That's right. Thank you so much for that. I think we have about 15 more minutes or 12 more minutes. So my last two or three questions will again continue in the same direction of the responsibility of academic spaces. And when we're talking about academic spaces within the U.S. empire, of course, you know, we have traditionally white institutions, historically black institutions, Hispanic-serving institutions, and Native American institutions. So as a person who has been working in a historically black space, to me, I see it as this amazing opportunity to utilize the classroom as a space to bring about liberation through education and connecting classroom and students with community and providing them with the necessary, space to nurture their thought processes through which they come into their own and become the intellectuals that their community needs and for them to be who they are. So speak to us on the importance of these spaces, historically black schools, and I know it all goes back to, a lot of it goes back to whether institutions are state-run or, you know, they're private, and how the dollars determine the pedagogical agenda, but I think you know what I'm getting at in terms of how do we, in this day and age, not just because of Trump, but because of the necessity of people's conditions, how do you make these spaces rise up to the occasion?
Okay, and I want you to correct me. I'm hoping that I understand you correctly. But if I start veering off left, to push me back. I think, again, at this period in time, again, and I have to speak always, you know, politically, what is our strategic objective? Our strategic objective right now is to increase and enhance the national consciousness of our people, right? And so every institution, every opportunity that builds up our people's national consciousness, where our people don't just become a people in themselves, but a people for themselves, consciously fighting at black people for black liberation. That's our immediate objective. Institutions, schools, become a key place where we can raise that national consciousness so that the people begin to fight for people for themselves. Now, I have to confess, I've never had the opportunity to engage in a historically black institution, right?
except as a very small child. As a very small child, for instance, I attended the Jackson State University Laboratory School in first and second grade. Right? But I think I mentioned my family moved to California right after that. And so I grew up in California. I went to white universities. Today I teach at Georgia State University. But again, I think in that example of Georgia State, within that state-run institution, which is a traditionally white institution up until the 1970s, right? We have built an enclave, a liberated enclave, right? Students, whether they are majors in Africana studies or biology majors, feel that this is safe space that they can come, get support, get the things they need, right? And also it raises their sense of purpose through the institution. That's the purpose of historically black institutions, whether it's like we are in an enclave. We say that we're like a quilombo. We're behind enemy lines, right?
Right.
Jackson State University is more like liberated territory, right? But wherever we are, our work as black institutions is to contribute to the raising of the national consciousness. And again, and I have to say, in line with MXGM and NAPO's ideas, this does not mean, you know, creating black fantasies. This does not mean creating some kind of black racialism, right? Where we're insisting on somehow that New Africans or black people are inherently superior to white people or anybody else. This is about a true national consciousness, right, that is also a revolutionary consciousness. What do I mean by that? A consciousness of our people as a people who see their relationship with all other revolutionary peoples around the world. And that's an important thing for me to say, that revolutionary consciousness is not racialist consciousness. It is a national consciousness where the people see their relationship to the rest of the world and see themselves as viable components and parts of that world, and see that our mission is to reclaim our independence, our self-determination, and to struggle against the forces that inhibit our self-determination and our liberation, which are what? Imperialism, colonialism, and global capitalism, or neoliberal capitalism.
Right.
All of our education has to be in some way to unpack those ideas in those institutions where we are, and to create that safe space where our people can talk about those things in honest and open ways. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. Thank you so much for that. I didn't need to push back. You were on the right track. So one more question I have, I guess maybe two, you were talking about the way in which movements around the world connect the. So would you speak to MXGM and the role of MXGM and how MXGM's political education happens to be global? Because I've heard several stories in my interactions with Akhil and Mikhaya and Dr. Umoja on how the political consciousness is built through an understanding of these movements from around the world, revolutionary movements around the world, and the way in which solidarity is developed. So if you want to speak to that a little bit.
Absolutely. Three things. We are a revolutionary nationalist movement, which means that we understand our people inside the United States as a nation with the right to self-determination. We are also a pan-African movement. We understand that even though we are a distinct nation, we are a part of the historical lineage and heritage of Africans that were dispersed throughout the diaspora. So we are a pan-Africanist movement that sees the importance of relinking and building African unity wherever Africans are. Okay. Then thirdly, we are an internationalist movement. We are also internationalist, but you can't be a good internationalist if you're not a good nationalist, right? Mm-hmm. Because you got to interrelate with somebody. We are an international movement,
absolutely,
which means wherever we find people who we can align with, who are anti-imperialist, in other words, they believe in the sovereignty of nations, who are mm-hmm. anti-capitalist, that means that they understand that what's sucking the lifeblood out of colonized peoples around the world is this unnatural mm-hmm. thirst for profit at the expense of human life. Who understand that not only are they anti-capitalist and anti-imperialist, but that they are also internationalist. In other words, the oppressed peoples of the world can't go it alone. We need each other. And so our mm-hmm. objective has to be to build international solidarity with all the revolutionary peoples that we can. And that's mm-hmm. our objective. We have historically always done that, built international mm-hmm. solidarity with Africa mm-hmm. first and foremost, with Latin America, mm-hmm. with Asia, with those peoples mm-hmm. of Europe who are revolutionary and anti-imperialist. And so that's always mm-hmm. an important part of the work that we do.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Doc. Thank you so much for that. And I guess this will be my last question. So how do you see young people who are constantly bombarded by so much information through multiple media platforms to create a sense of revolutionary consciousness in order to be self-determined and responsible in their communities? How does discernment and ideation of thought happen to how can that be made possible for young people with everything that's happening around them these days? So if you can speak to that, mm-hmm. because I know the camp that mm-hmm. MSDM does, the PAMZICO, and then Colombo as a school, and I mean, there are some beautiful examples of the work MXGM does with young people. I just want you, if you can, to uplift some of that work so that people who are listening can understand there are ways in which beautiful ways in which young people can be embraced by love and wisdom and good community.
Absolutely. I think, you know, again, we have to reproduce the models that we have created. I mm-hmm. have to say mm-hmm. that I believe that the program and strategic objectives of MXGM and NAPO is the best chance that we have for liberation, or I wouldn't be a part of this movement, right?
right.
You know, and in that, I believe that we have to reproduce that. We have to reproduce, again, we see that an important part of building a revolutionary movement is building revolutionary mm. institutions. Revolution is not just about being against something, it's also about being mm-hmm. for something and building something. So an important mm-hmm. part is those five strategic objectives: building people's institutions, youth institutions, economic institutions, mm-hmm. self-determination mm-hmm. institutions. And in building the people's institutions, we're also building the nation, we're building the national consciousness, because those institutions mm-hmm. become the spaces in which the people can live. And so a part mm-hmm. of what we have been doing, and I can't just speak generally. I have to speak what our responsibility is as a movement. We have to be teaching right. these things to young people from as young as we can, 5, 6, 7 years old, mm-hmm. and teaching, giving examples of it, and then reproducing that. We're going to have to spread broader throughout the South in particular, to other than mm-hmm. Mississippi, to Jackson, other than Atlanta. Mm-hmm. We've got to start putting these institutions in place and then making sure that these institutions are grounded in revolutionary ideas and revolutionary practices, right? So for those three things that I mentioned, that they're definitely revolutionary nationalists, but also Pan-Africanists and internationalists, so that mm-hmm. we see ourselves as part of a worldwide movement for self-determination.
Thank you so much, Doc. I guess we have to continue these conversations.
I would love
in
to.
A
it's
consistent
been fun, Noel.
Way.
I've heard about this.
Mm-hmm.
I would love
Hello?
To do that. Absolutely. Can you hear me?
Thank you. Yeah, I can hear you now.
Absolutely.
absolutely. Yeah, I would love to follow up and do this again.
Thank you so much. Yes, we would definitely have to continue sharing this story. And the beautiful aspect of this program is all these shows are recorded and they're up on Black Talk Radio. So it's curated in a beautiful way. So if people want to go back and listen to this, you know, this could be part of the political education that we can continue through these media platforms that we have access to. So I thank Black Talk Radio Show for giving us this opportunity to share what's happening in Jackson and the amazing work of the Malcolm X grassroots movement. It's necessary work that's getting done around the country. Thank you so much, Black Talk Radio Show, and I want to thank Akhil and Dr. Akinyele for taking time out of their schedules to be on this show with us. Thank you, everybody, and free the land.
Free the land.